And we're here.
Hey!
Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're trying to help you become the best version of yourself by talking about all things life, leadership, law of attraction, whatever else we want to talk about.
That's it.
Which is awesome.
I hope you have something figured out because I really don't.
Are you having a good day today?
A great day. Yeah.
That's good. So I do have something I want to talk about. So if you didn't have a topic, I had a direction to go. This is how Joe and I pick topics, by the way. Right now, we're
darts
on the air.
And...
Yeah. So I want to talk about which comes first, the chicken or the egg.
Okay.
In the sense of, we talk a lot about mentality and reality.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we have to get our mentality there before the reality matches up, right? That's something we espouse quite a bit. And you got to have the faith. You got to see it before you have it. That's that sort of deal. I want to bring this into a financial realm because I think it'll be tangible for people and help them understand. So for instance, you can't spend money like a rich person until you have money like a rich person.
Right.
Otherwise you'll be in debt.
Right.
But then living in the scarcity and poverty mentality of I don't have money for that and I'm pinching pennies and cutting coupons and always trying to make never let you get to be the rich person.
Yes.
So your mentality, what you have to do to stay within your budget versus the mentality you have to have, they're juxtaposed to each other. Is that fair? So
in your example,
in my example, so which comes first, the chicken or the egg? How do you navigate? Hey, I shouldn't be worried about going out and spending $100. I shouldn't be here going, oh, that's so expensive. But if it's outside my budget and puts me in a deficit, then I'm going to get further and further away from being the wealthy person that I want to be. So, we could apply this to relationships and so on, but finance is easy because I think.
All right. Well, I'm going to change it down an example and then bring you back to money.
Okay.
So like you want to run marathons. So the currency of being in shape enough that you can run marathons is running marathons, right? Mm-hmm. There's not a position that you get to enjoy the fruit of running, being able to run a marathon until you've bought the rest of that. You've paid the fee, the entrance fee on it. So let's go back to money.
Yep.
So you want to be wealthy. Right. The fruit of being wealthy is you have enough money. You have money to do whatever. That's the fruit. You don't get to enjoy that fruit until you get the ideal and the mentality that will allow you to be in that position. Like there's all kinds of things. There's stamina and being able to handle the hardships, and there's going to be able to handle the good times and whatever. And that mental clarity in it is what you develop. So here's the deal. There are things you can do to start valuing. You can start valuing things before you have money to value. So take stuff that you already have, right? And you look at it and say, what would a rich person feel about this, right? And same thing with the runner. I'm not a runner, but what would a runner be doing right now? Yeah. And you keep putting yourself in those slots and you don't say, well, if I'm not able to run a marathon, I'm not doing anything until I can run a marathon.
Sure. So then on a financial front, you know, you obviously have to budget. You have to live within your means. You have to be able to do that. But how much do you focus? Obviously, you have kind of two camps, right? You have the Dave Ramsey camp that's like, we're going to focus on debt. We're going to crucify debt. We're going to do everything we can.
We're cutting
up credit cards, et cetera, et cetera. I've picked up on that.
Yeah.
And then you have the Joe Danier, the Grant Cardone, some of those that are just like, you just got a 10x your income. Just, you know, there's 9 different ways that you can make more money. And when you make more money, that stuff goes away.
Yep.
So you can focus on the $30,000 of student loan debt and the $10,000 you know, credit card debt, and you can nickel and dime that and pay $200 and $500 and all that stuff. And that works. Dave Ramsey's taking a whole lot of people out of debt. But then there's this other camp that's like, bump that. I'm not focused on my debt, but let's start 2 other businesses and we're going to generate enough income, or let's jump on an opportunity, or let's invest. And then I'm going to flip the script on that. And I guess I'm wrestling between two worlds.
Okay.
Because obviously you need to budget, and obviously you don't want to be in debt.
Okay.
And there's 2 different ways to get there. One, to me, positions you in a way that, at least mentality-wise, is tougher to think like an investor, like a wealthy person.
Right.
And the other side, it may get you to financial freedom, but you're getting there through scarcity. Is that fair?
Absolutely. 100%. And so here's how you sort of like reframe your mind so that you can start developing this skill. I call it, on one side of the equation, is an attrition model. Okay. So, and the attrition model works for people that it works for, It's not, sure. It doesn't work for everyone.
Yep.
So of the two, the Dave Ramsey is not the attrition model, mm-hmm. right? If you, and so if you know yourself, like let's just say you look around your world and find something that's disappointing in your world. Mm-hmm. Like my front seat of my car is a mess,
yeah.
right? So attrition would be that I'm going to take pieces and make my front seat better, like one little thing at a time. Every time I get out of the car, I'm going to take two objects out of here. And in 100 days, my front seat will be clean. That's attrition. You deprive yourself of emotional energy and you just make it a logical mathematical equation that equals, if I take more stuff out of my car, less or more than when I put it in, I will run out of stuff to take out. And through attrition, it fixes the actual problem. Now, most of the people you're probably citing are on the emotional side, where I'm going to take my car and I'm going to turn it upside down and I'm going to dump everything all at once. That's the Dave Ramsey way. Then when it's clean and clear and feels good, then start rebuilding on zero rather than building on a negative number.
Yep. Totally makes sense. So in those two mentalities, they both can get you to the goal.
They can.
So you're not saying one's bad and one's not.
Not at all.
And so it's just a matter of figuring out what works for you and your mentality. Do you find it, well, then maybe this is a general question for Joe then, do you find it easier or more difficult to make another 30 grand or to pay off 30 grand in debt with what you have?
Depends where I'm at in the cycle. If I need, like if I'm in a funk, right?
Yeah.
Then I need something that's going to emotionalize me and get me rolling. If I'm not in a funk, like I'm just churning things out, then I can invest that energy into do something more methodically, reserve some of that energy for things that matter. Because a lot of times, like in the moment, $30,000 seems like a lot. Sure. But when you take a step back, when you look at it from like 10 years ago, it was like this in the whole landscape of your life.
Yeah. And that's true. Some of those things seem daunting. You know, if we took this out of the realm of money for a minute and talked about relationships, or we talked about a job, perception is everything.
Yes.
You know, if you, Pastor Mike did this great illustration today in staff meeting. But if you hold like a bottle cap up close to your face, you know, you can't see around it. You're like, I don't know what's behind it. But if you throw it over there, it's really small. And so the perception of what we allow to get close enough to us to be a distraction or to take us off our game is huge. And I think that happens a lot with our weaknesses, whether that's money, relationships, whatever, we let that one thing become like, oh, I'm never going to be able to overcome. And it just looks like this mountain in front of us, when in actuality, it's this little anthill, but we've just gotten up real close to inspect it and to learn all about it. And I know that navigating that, you have to pull back. And sometimes that takes sitting down with somebody who's really good at whatever it is you stink at and is able to say, it's actually not as bad as you think. You need to do this and this. And if I were you, I would do this.
And number one is taking out of that emotional wheelhouse, because you got to think of it. The attrition route, if I said, I'm going to take 100 days, right, and remove two things out of my car over 100 days, how much forgiveness is in there? Like if you skip a day in there, it's no big freaking deal.
Yeah.
But if you say one Hail Mary, there's so much pressure and you're going to look at every detail and you're going to over scrutinize. You're going to make yourself feel really bad if you come up short. So you got to know, like when you're most powerful, that, you know, and it's worth the risk to throw a couple of long bombs.
So this makes me think then of New Year's resolutions.
Yes.
Because those are good, emotional and everybody goes 100% in.
Yep.
And within 3 weeks, they're making a donation to the gym.
Yep.
You know, they go all in on whatever it is, whatever the goal is. A lot of them are health and fitness related. And so people jump in there and they go, oh, this is going to be the year. This is going to be great. Guilty as charged. And they jump in and it's an emotional thing. Hey, we're going to clear the car out all in one shot. And then you don't. And then you're like, oh, that was such a waste of time. I can't believe I did that. And then you're actually worse off and usually gain weight on the flip side. So what you're saying is don't go in with the New Year's resolution mentality. That's probably not the right mentality to
have. Well, you could if you know yourself and know that you're going to be in a honeymoon phase for 30 days and you're going to do it for 30 days. So make the plan 30 days, what you know about yourself. If you're like, this is my new lifestyle and I'm doing it at New Year's, probably not, Buster. Make it a 30-day thing and we'll talk in February.
So you're saying more manageable short-term goals.
Yeah, because those benchmarks, those things that are built into your calendar, things that happen every year, like New Year's, like that's a gateway. I use those too. I don't use it to set New Year's resolutions, but it's like when I walk up to that pole, it reminds me that I'm supposed to like make some new decisions, you know, up in my world. And I don't take it to the level of like really reinventing myself on that day, because there's 365 of those days if you really plan well enough, you know?
That's right. Well, what do you do, or what do you say to the person that they're trying to make some headway, right? Maybe they're trying to make headway financially. Maybe they're trying to fix their marriage, maybe wherever they're at. And the things they're doing, they're making some headway, but sometimes you're making headway and you're taking two steps forward and five steps backwards, yes, because the mentality you've had to have to get to where you're going is actually just limiting you moving forward. And I've seen this happen time and time again with people where, I was able to lose 10 pounds. Well, that's great, but you starved yourself and it's not sustainable.
Right.
Well, I was able to pay off debt. Well, that's fine, but you're eating ramen noodles. Like there has to be a way for you to do this that is not the, you know.
So why would you say something to yourself like, I'm going to lose 30 pounds mm-hmm. in a minute and a half, right? You only have one reason. You don't really believe that that's a goal that you can do. You say it because of the sort of the emotional response you get, the chemicals from making a big declaration that way, even if you don't believe it. So you got to pare yourself back a little bit and keep repeating it until you actually believe. Because that faith, I mean, if you're like, I'm going to receive money, and then in your head you're like, I'm not really going to receive
money,
it's not going to work.
No, that's 100% true. And I think, I've wrestled with that on you and I've walked through that with some of the giving campaigns with church and stuff, and the way that I've had to reframe even the way I've talked about it and thought about it. Because as I was saying it, I was saying out loud that I believed, but the tone and the tenor and the attitude was like, I really hope so. And not, hey, it's already here.
That's why I hate the fake it till you make it, because people think going through the motions if they believe, but 2 seconds later, if I really pushed on you, I would know that you've got more doubt than you do belief.
Yeah. So how do you conjure that up when you're in the middle? I preached a message this weekend called Stuck in the Middle. You're not at the bottom of the mountain. You're not at the top. You're in the middle. And that's where characters form. That's where you find out what you're made of. What do you do, whether it's finances again or a relationship or whatever, you launch a business, what do you do in the middle when you're not quite where you want to be? You're not wealthy, you're not skinny, you haven't hit your goals, and your mentality is saying, hey, turn around and go back. This is not worth it. How do you push through those moments, and how do you develop mentality before you make the climb?
Number one struggle that people have, whether it be in what we're talking about now, starting a business, figuring out what they're going to do, is deciding and really saying, this is what I want. I mean, people say what they think people want to hear, like, I want to have a bunch of money, right? And that's not really what they want. But so if you dug through it, you could find out, like, what about having money is what you want? Or what about having a better job is what you had? Or what about, and you keep digging, you find out what the real problem is. Now, once you get to that level, you've now found out what your real goal is, and you could be a little bit more deliberate.
That's interesting. So, and you can even push through that, I would imagine, and you'll find even some of the goals, even though on the outside they may present themselves as noble, are actually quite selfish.
For sure.
So, you know, you push through and like, all right, well, I want to, $1 million company. Okay, well, why do you want $1 million company? Well, I have this great product. Da, 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 da. Okay, well, what's great about the product? Well, it does this. And so if you had $1 million company, what would you do? And like, and you get through it, and maybe they do have some real noble cause, but maybe it's, they just want to have a crap ton of money that, you know, they have a certain lifestyle, or maybe it's an ego thing, or maybe, you know, there's all different things that drive people. And not all of them are bad. Actually, I think most motivations with the right tweak can be healthy.
But it's like a game of telephone, because so the phraseology really matters to me. And so like when you ask me just off the cuff, like, do you want to have a lot of money? And I say, yeah, I have a lot of money. Well, now you've heard me say that, and you're like, you see what I do, and my objective must be have a lot of money. But if you talk to me for 20 seconds, I would say my real objective is I'd never want to make a decision because of money. Right. So, yes, you have to have a lot of money in order to not have to make a decision based on money. But you were like, he wants a lot of money, and that must be the objective. And then you go off and have an objective that's not the same as mine.
Yeah, no, that's so good. And people make certain assumptions about people that have money, run a business. I mean, you name it. People make assumptions about pastors all the time. They make those assumptions because, well, I had a pastor once, or I've seen this video on YouTube or whatever it is. Or, you know, I met a rich guy once, and he was, you know, Scrooge McDuck. And it's like, you know, most of the time, the individuals, you know, as I've gotten to know you, like if someone would have told me, oh, Joe's all about money, I'm like, get the heck out of here. like I've spent so much time with him, and I've watched him, you know, not just give for the sake of giving or any of that sort of stuff, but like, I've watched you enough to know that doesn't make you tick. It's important in the hierarchy, because you don't want to be limited in your goals and where you can take your family and what you can do for the community, etc. But yeah, it's like, you know, hearing you say that, I was like, well, that's not Joe's goal at all. Like, as soon as you said it, I'm like, wrong. But I know that, you know, a lot of people don't realize, or struggle with decision making. Use that word. That's the number one issue people struggle with. Decide, and that decide word is so interesting. It comes from a group of words, right? There's homicide, suicide, all of those. And the word decide, if you break it down and you look at the etymology of it, it actually comes from two words, and you look at it and it literally means to kill all other options, which is super interesting.
Beautiful.
Most people struggle to make a decision because, well, what if it doesn't work out? I need to keep this other option open. And it really comes back to the adage of some of those Viking generals and others that would pull up on the shores and say, men, burn the boats. We got no other options. It's forward or death. And when you make decisions that way, whether it's starting a business, if you start a business, but you're like, I'm going to kind of keep my job open over here, you're never going to go all in on that. I kind of dating this person over here, but you know, I'm still texting, you know, Susie over here. I'm going to keep that. You're never going to go all in on that. And I could go round and round. And the same thing's true financially. You know, I'm just going to kind of keep this open and keep that option. It's like, well, you know, you're either going to go all in on some things or you're not. And I think that's true across the board. You know, when you jump into an opportunity, if you don't kill other options, you're always going to have that lingering, and plan B will always become plan A. It's just the way that it works.
Yeah. And so like, I have a really like strict way of remembering what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, even though you read all the literature and I study this stuff and I'm constantly reminding, right? My vision board gives those goals, but there's method behind all of these different strategies that if you don't put it together and organize it in a way, you won't remember what you're supposed to be working on, like, or supposed to be doing. I feel like I have this paper in my back room here, and it's on my wall. And I basically give myself a reminder of the healthy parts of decision-making and the unhealthy parts of being indecisive. And I almost want to grab it. Let me go.
Go grab it. Well, he's grabbing that. You know, if you are enjoying our show, we would just encourage you to like and subscribe to the Youngstown Studio page. You'll hear a little ad at the end, but we absolutely love being on here with you every couple of days and just kind of sharing some of this stuff. So he's got, this is his vision board paper, and that's decision-making paper. You're gonna have to move that TV over. Nobody can see it in the shot.
How are we? Any closer?
No.
All right. I will just cite it because I'm telling you, I had no idea we were going to talk about this, but it is okay. So look at the freaking top. Who would have thought that in my back room that I have to remind myself how healthy ways to making a decision? And so these are the priorities, mm-hmm. right? Health, peace of mind, labor of love, free of fear and worry, positive attitude and wealth, right? So the positive influence, if I'm inspired to do something and decide because of positive things, I'm going to be able to answer it that it was for these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And over here, these are also reasons to decide. Ill health, I'm going to do something about sickness or fear and worry or indecision and doubt and frustration and discouragement, poverty and want, envy, greed, jealousy, and superstition, right? And you see these little check marks? Like when I'm over here, I have to make note that I was over there. So I remind myself that I don't want to live there.
Yeah,
so it's not like once you decide this shit, you're off the island and you never visit there. This is proof that I live there too.
Yeah. So when you have a moment of indecision, do you make a decision just for the sake of making a decision? Even if it's a bad, like...
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, and hey, then next time around, I'll get it better the next time. Yeah. I would rather make one than not make one.
Yeah, no, that's so good. These little charts and stuff, they're super easy for you to do at home. I mean, you can go pick up a pad like Joe has with a little stick-em thing, and you can grab that and, have your own little vision board and own little chart, and you can put your own stuff on there. You can get more sophisticated if you want and get some poster board and, you know, cut out pictures. And, you know, we did that with some of the addicts that we were helping them learn how to do their first vision boards, and they got magazines and cut things out that they wanted.
But I just picture like most people I work with, and this just like occurred to me, like my house is wrapped in crap like this to keep me under control and remind me. Other people put things around their house that does not help them, does not remind them of what they're working on. It's almost like they would hide this. This is the prominent part in my life.
Yeah. My wife uses Stick'em. She's got about 12 of them on the side of her bed, and we got some in the bathroom somewhere. And I got my vision board right up in between my closet and the bathroom.
Guys. You're my favorite.
So it's but it's one of those things that you see every day. You know, you need to put those scriptures, those reminders, those affirmations, those things that, you're trying to, and that's how you switch the mentality. Whether we start out talking about finances, yes, you have to set a budget, but you also need to understand and think like a wealthy person and think about generosity and think about those things like, oh, those five things make somebody a wealthy person. It's not necessarily amount of money.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's do some examples of how you can go act wealthy.
Yeah.
That does not include like credit card and start swiping it and spending. Yeah. So what kind of wealth, I'll let you be my interviewer here.
Yeah.
And let's dig through and find everyday people that you can get off of work today and go do something as a wealthy person. So let's get creative.
Top two are super easy. And and then we'll get into some other ones. Gratitude for what you already have. 100%. Every person I've met with a six-figure income or higher with the house that they want in that place appreciates everything that they have. Sure, do they have days of like, I wish that was different. I wish that, but they'll go out and change it. You know, there are times where their car breaks down. Yeah, but they have a different mentality. They're grateful they have a car to fix, where everybody else is like, ah, crap, I got to go fix my car. And then two, it's not just gratitude, but then gratitude always leads to generosity. I have never met in all my years of church ministry, anybody that had any type of money, even people that didn't have a ton of money, wanted to be generous and gotten to that spot. But especially people with funds, they were always like, Pastor, just let me know what you need. We'll figure it out. Like if we're going to, you know, you got a project coming up, I've had people say to me, before you take it to the church, come to me first, because maybe I can write the $20,000 check or whatever. And just, you don't even have to take it to the church. You shouldn't have to burden them with that. Like, God's given me the ability to do this. And I'm like, wow. Like that, like, but I've never had a poor person do that. Like, you know, they understand like, hey, I've been given this and I want to be generous. And so they're looking for opportunities to give. And I love that. You know, you see that all the time. People are in position to do that. And it's this myth that's perpetrated by the media that all rich people are Scrooge McDucks trying to just, you know, hoard their gold bars in their bathroom. You know, none of the ones that I've met have ever been in that place. And I'm sure you echo both of those things. Sure. What else would you add to that list? So we have gratitude and generosity.
So this is more of a formula.
Both of those are free, by the way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And pens and phones, right? Now, a wealthy person values everything down to the smallest thing. Know what it is in their life. They know why they bought it. They know what they use it for. They don't bring something into their world without bringing it on purpose. They don't let this pen happen to them. Now, they earn this pen.
Stuff doesn't happen to them. I like that.
This pen has responsibilities that are tied to it. In order to earn this, you have to have a place to put it. You have to know how long you want it to last. You have to know everything about it. So instead of collecting 20 of them because you can't decide, I want to have one and earn it before I put a second one up there. So that's this one. Now, phone, it's the same thing. You value this phone by giving it parameters and disciplines and then serving those parameters and disciplines. So let's just say this is my phone and its priority is so that I can do business and people get a hold of me. And the priority is that I'm using it to be productive. And so I'm eliminating it. Anything that's not productive, anything that's gossip is gone. Anything that's time wasting is gone.
Help me, Joe. Help somebody. I'm amening you right now.
All right.
He's not used to being yelled at while he preaches, but he's preaching right now.
So one of the things that you can do is start going around your place and getting rid of the stuff, giving it to somebody else that you don't deserve at this point or haven't earned at this point or don't know how to use at this point. You're going to be left with stuff around you that you could put a little bit more thought into. And then the stuff that you mentioned it happens next, where then you're more grateful because you can basically name everything you own and why you own it and what purpose it serves.
That's so good. That's worth the price of admission today. Just that for me anyway.
I'm going on break.
Cause I totally am let's just get that. We'll use it at some point. And then you get it. And then, you know, 8 years later you find it, you know, it's still in the original packaging, like, you know, in a closet somewhere. Oh, I guess we never used that. There was one time, so stupid. We went out. I don't know if we got it we bought it somewhere and it was like on sale. I'm a big sale person, which I know is a mentality I have to shift because wealthy people don't do sales or coupons or any of that sort of stuff. And, but I don't know. It's like this, like, tray thing that like heated up or cooled down and it had like three little cubbies to like put like dips and food and stuff for when you have people over, and it was like on sale and I bought it. I think we used it twice and Sam told me, she was like, this is such a stupid purchase, why would you buy this
whatever,
and we ended up selling it in a yard sale for like $10 you know, before we moved here. And but I look at that and I thought, that was, you know, like, what could I have done had I not had that mentality at that point?
Here's a challenge. I want you to spreadsheet. Okay. You love spreadsheets. So I hate spreadsheets. Easy for
my wife likes them, so maybe I'll turn her loose.
Okay, so here's what you're gonna do. You're going to take something that you've bought recently.
Okay.
And you're going to put it on a spreadsheet with the price that you paid. And I want you, every time you use that thing, figure out what the cost per use is on everything.
Okay.
Now, I allow you things that you use a lot, put as much money as you need to into because you've actually used it.
Makes sense.
Things not become the most expensive things in your life, even if you got it on sale, and even if it's only $10 if you use it one time.
Wow.
So I want you to trial this.
Now, that's really good. Okay? I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I paid $130 for the shoes I have on.
I'd pay $2,000 because they get you everywhere you go.
Right. And I wear them, you know, every day. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, like, you know, I've worn them more than 100 days. So, you know, it breaks down to less than a dollar a day. Start thinking about that. But then there's other things that I bought that I'm like,
gosh. Like a suit jacket.
Yeah. Like
four times, like yeah, $500.
Exactly.
Very expensive.
Wow. That's an interesting, maybe Sam and I are going to do that. That'd be really fascinating. Yeah, do the
spreadsheet and figure it out.
Like I'm already, as you're saying that, my wife likes to throw everything away or give it away. And I'm just like, but we might need that in a decade. Like I'm so bad at that. And we've talked about that before. So I love that idea. So I mentioned one other. So, so we said that, they value everything that they have and everything has a purpose.
Yes.
I mentioned coupons and, sales and stuff like that. So you're saying wealthy people are not driven by that. How do they navigate their purchases? I've heard people like Mark Cuban will go in January and buy like all the toilet paper. He'll get all his essential supplies delivered to the house. He doesn't have to buy anything the rest of the year, pumps it all in January. I've heard of others that do that as well. They're not going to sit there and be like, oh, well, you know, it's two for, you know, whatever, let's go get some more. Talk about that a little bit. Cause that's a mentality that a lot of people are like, well, I clip coupons and I save money. And, you know, I show up for, you know, two for one soup day or whatever. And, you know, they nickel and dime themselves and they end up having a scarcity mentality and it ends up harming them in the long run, even though they might save 30 cents at the grocery store.
Yes. And it is, I call it mental overhead.
Okay.
How often do you want to engage your brain and think about buying paper towels? That's what you basically do when you clip coupons, because the trade-off is you save 30 cents, but you invested time into that saving 30 cents. So here's what I mean. I'm just going to piss a lot of people off. You ready? So I buy paper towels, and paper towels are maybe a buck a roll or whatever. I don't even know what they are. I'll pay $7 a roll, put it on autopilot so it comes the first of every month, so I never have to freaking think about paper towels forever, and I save that time. Now, here's the big thing about mental overhead. Now, it really does matter what you do with the free time that you have.
Yep.
If you invested in opportunities,
it's not just about watching Netflix.
Right.
Yeah.
If you invest in opportunities, then when you clear the way that I don't have to dick around with paper towels, then I can take advantage of that next opportunity that comes and visits me. If you're worrying about Netflix and the computer and buying paper towels and where you're going to get, you don't have time for opportunities to visit you.
So for instance, what are some of those other things that wealthy people automate out of their life so that they have time for opportunities? Do you cut your grass?
No.
Do you have a cleaner that comes to the house?
Yeah.
So I those were two off the top of my head, because my wife and I have that in our goal thing. I'm like, listen, I don't mind cutting the grass, but I start doing the math and I'm like, that's like 3.5 hours, and then we got to bag it, and then I gotta, you know, when it gets all said and done, like that's a chunk of time that I don't get back every week, sometimes twice a week in the summer. And the same sort of thing, like we said with cleaning, like straightening up. We bought one of those robo automatic vacuums. Awesome. I mean, it doesn't do 100% of the job, but hey, 80% of the job, if you run it, you know, once a night, you know, we're watching stuff, the kids are in bed, and we let it run and it cleans up the kitchen for us. So that's something that we don't have to do. So I love thinking through those things and going, all right, what's the trade-off? I can pay somebody $35 to come cut my grass every week and I get 3 hours of my life back. Yep. And they might come in with three people and be done in 20 minutes and move on to the next property. What are some other things that you can do to save time to give you opportunities?
Well, first of all, like finances, simplifying your finances so that you could just pay them and not ever think about them ever again.
So you automate all your bills.
I've not seen like a bill in a long time.
Okay.
Right. Guess what happens? If I budget high, like on everything, so that no matter what, I at least paid more than I owe. So I don't have to think about it anymore.
Wow.
Right. So I budget $200 and I send them $200. Most of the time I'm like buying my way out of overpayments for like years after I've paid it to it.
So yeah. Do you, what's your credit card philosophy? Dave Ramsey says, cut them all up. Don't use them. Obviously, you know, church, we have a business credit card and stuff like that. Sam and I've gone back and forth. I was a dum-dum in college and I got 7 credit cards and racked up a bunch of credit card debt and I had to climb my way out. And I did. We have 1 credit card between us that we use to try and rack up airline miles and make big purchases and that sort of stuff. How do you navigate using credit cards? Because I've seen you make a couple posts about, hey, you had so much interest built up and you decided you got rid of them. But I know you have 1 or 2. So how do you navigate?
So I'm not allowed to pay interest, right? I could do credit cards. I'm just not allowed to pay interest. So we put about $450,000 or $500,000 on a credit card. So when I saw that out there where I'm going to be spending on a credit card anyway, I got a credit card that gives me 3% and then I get to enjoy, you know, that. But it'll take me probably about 100 years to claw back the interest that I paid when I was young and stupid at 2%. Sure.
Yeah, 27% interest or whatever it was. Yeah.
But I'm ahead today.
Yeah. So good. So do you advise people, do rich people use credit cards? Do wealthy people think that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
is that a hack to the system as long as you don't pay?
But if you use language like that, then no. Because hacking and leveraging spending someone else's money, you got way too much mental energy put into it. That's right. Good. Make it simple like me. Like, it's easier for me to use a card than cash. So it's saving me time. And then it automatically drafts. I don't ever see like what I spent and I don't ever see what I put on there. It's just automatic.
And you sit down at the end of the month and check everything out or no?
Only if I think that something's off. Like, I invest as little time and energy as I possibly can.
You automate
again, I have a phone, so I invented responsibilities, right? Mm-hmm. So the credit card has its own responsibilities. I have to be very simple and I have to be very pragmatic on my purchasing, else if I do something funky, then I got to pay attention to the statement and I got to write a double payment and I got to do this. If I keep it simple where I only spend what I'm supposed to spend, I only spend the same things I only spend and I always pay it the same way, then I can take it off the radar.
Do you chart a budget once a year, once a month? How do you navigate your personal budget?
Big ones once a year.
Okay.
And I basically every Friday I track all my stuff. And you know, it's pretty perfect. It's like a little symphony.
That's cool. We talk about, you know, wealthy mentalities, right? Wealthy people use the word invest a lot, right? Define that word, because some people think like, oh, you know, you're just playing the, you know, legal slot machine. You know, they're investing in the stock market or they're investing in Bitcoin or whatever that is. Talk about the mentality that it takes to invest and why invest versus save is better.
Okay, so investing is not outsourcing responsibility to other people, right? Giving your money to somebody else to do that, that's not really you investing. Right. That's you making it safe so someone else is managing because you're not disciplined or don't have enough experience. And that's better. Yep. Right. But you need to be able to develop your own senses of that responsibility. Okay. So, for instance, the exchange is this: you have money, you put it in something and you get more money because of what you put it into. And you don't invest all of your money into unproven things. So you go about and say, hey, I really like real estate. Let me see if I can invest in real estate. So then you invest in yourself to go learn where you need to put your money. Yep. And if you end up saying, okay, I'm limiting myself $10,000, I'm going to put it in there. And if at the end of that investment, I have more than $10,000, I'll probably want to do it again.
Yeah.
If I have less than $10,000, then the next investment's going to be in something different, something that I'm more competent in.
Yeah. I heard Grant Cardone say one time, someone asked him, if you only had $500, what would you invest in? And they were looking for like, you know, what stock or what would you put it in? He goes, I'd put it back into yourself because you're already broke. I thought it was a great response.
Well, and that's what people skip. The reason people don't know what investment, they think that if they do something, they don't have to work. Mm-hmm. Right. When you invest, it's more work. Like, it's on you. This phone means that I have to do shit. This credit card means that I have to do shit. This stuff like makes me do stuff. So like if I did an investment and, let me think of a good example.
I know you've been teaching some of the guys here, how to invest in the stock market and some of the trends that you do and stuff like that. Some people look at that and they go, I don't know how to do that. It's foreign to me. But obviously you've taught yourself how to do that and you figured a way to see a good return on that. Some people look at that and they're like, oh, I'm just going to take, I'll take my credit card and swipe it in and go on Robinhood and hopefully I can turn it into something else.
Yeah.
That's really not a wise idea.
No.
You're saying, you know, you need to learn how you're investing. Otherwise, stick it in your savings account and collect the, 0.001% interest.
Let's talk about your cutting the grass deal.
Yeah.
Okay. Because this is really how you have to think about money in the same way, because you're basically clearing off some spare time, right? So if you had $100, what would you put it into that would give you the best rate of return, right? So if I took 30 minutes that somebody was doing clearing my yard, I have to get a bigger return than if I was clearing my yard. So let's just say I can go, you know, till someone's garden for $50 and I pay $35 to have him cut my yard. There's a difference between that two. I can improve by $35 if I do that deal.
Right.
So
right.
If you gave me $500, the first thing I would say, can I put this in Joe, right? Can I put this in Joe where I am limited by something and this $500 buys me? Either it's a lack of knowledge or I can go purchase the knowledge. I don't have time, so I'm going to get somebody to do something I need so I can do something else. But you have that hierarchy of where you put your stuff. Mine is always this. If I'm like stuck, the money that comes in gets me unstuck. The second one, do I have a tool that I don't have at my disposal that I'd really like to have at my disposal? Notice I didn't say stocks and I didn't say bonds and I didn't say anything. The next level is new experiences and new opportunities. So if I go to a place and it represents that I get exposure to new people, that's more valuable to me than buying a stock that I'm going to be like, I got a stock. Yay for me. You know?
No, that's good. Do you think the weakness in most people that stay stuck paycheck to paycheck, which is like, I think 80% of the population or more, is literally living week to week, paycheck to paycheck. And they're not touching that next level of wealth. Is it really, mentality of get rich quick? Like, hey, I'm just going to buy these stocks, or hey, you know, invest in Bitcoin because it's going to go up. Like, everybody's trying to like, what can I do so that I don't have to work? And that's not the mentality.
I don't know who first said this, but I throw up in my mouth when I hear this passive income. Like, it makes me freaking crazy when people say freaking passive income, because it's like, hey, I want to work hard, but I want to be lazy and make money. Like, in all of my world, that's never actually, I've had this like levels that I jump up where I jump up from making 5% to making 10% to making 20%, but it was all me doing. It wasn't something that somebody gifted me or my money did for me.
Yeah. So you don't have those magical, properties or, there's all these guys on TikTok that are like, just buy 3 Airbnbs and you're going to make $85,000 a month. Cause they're like, I'm sure somebody somewhere does that.
Oh yeah. There's a scheme all the time.
So. Right. And so there's always an angle to some of those things. But there are some legit ones, but some of them are like, who was it? There's the guy that did the 4-hour work week. And you know, the whole idea and concept behind that is like, well, if I get enough where I finally invest my money in enough things, my money will pay me an interest back, the salary that I want to live on, and then I can go to the beach and do whatever I want. And it's interesting, like that mentality, I guess, works for some people, but I don't know. I've always been of the persuasion, I've always been in the spot, like, I don't ever want to retire. Like, it's never like, I've had people ask me like, oh, you know, how long do you think you'll pastor and stuff? Like, you know, you retire in your 60s. I'm like, I hope I get peeled dead off a, you know, platform at 90. Like, you know, I don't ever want to stop doing what I'm built to do. I hope we're doing podcasts, you know, to decrepit old men, you know, coming in here,
right,
you know, yelling about something. I hope that, but the whole idea that, you know, hey, I'm going to work for 30 years so that I can play golf 4 days a week and go to the Bahamas, you know, twice a year. To me, I'm like, that just doesn't entice me. I want to be in a place of freedom that I can do, hey, you know what, my kids are going off to do whatever, or we can do a great vacation or whatever. Like, I want the ability to do those things, but not at the expense of my purpose. And there's so many people that just want the ability to do all the fun stuff without doing anything else. And to me, I don't know, that's just nauseating to me.
Well, culture is a killer, because the natural tendency of our culture is that you have two deals and you're responsible for both sides of the deals. You have entropy, right?
Yep.
Where is the diffusion of energy, it spreads out like this, right? So you take an 8-hour work day, and when you're brand new on the job, you're efficient, you get a lot of shit done, you don't talk you're a whole pumped. Lot and whatever.
Yep.
The next day it diffuses, it gets a little less efficient. By the fifth year that you've been doing something,
you've got friends,
you're barely getting any work done. Like, you're maybe at 50% efficiency if you're lucky. So then it's up to you then to diffuse, to then focus it back and get back to an area where you get back to efficiency. And it's always that, you know, deal. You're smarter, you've got more opportunity. Yeah. So if you would just focus at the end, now you're primed to be able to have more money and more time at the same time. Yeah. But if you allow the diffusion to happen, you don't have either one of those because the diffusion is too expensive. It costs you too much to keep a diffused life spinning. And that's why, you know, and let me give you this one example, because we gave all the formulas doing it, but I kind of fragmented this a little bit. So we try to bring it all together.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, oh shit, my brain just went. Anyway, bring me back. What was I just talking about?
you were talking about diffusion. And the fact is, when you started a job,
that just happened in
you're super pumped about it and you put in 100% effort, but after 5 years, you're spreading it out.
Damn, I'm going
to
come back.
That's okay. It'll come back to you. So I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, the easy things that people can do, the gratitude, the generosity, those you can be generous.
Can I go?
Yeah, go.
So if it depending on what you do, like when you have an extra something, if God's going to give you a dollar and see what you do with it before he gives you an infinite amount of dollars.
There's a scripture for that one, Joe. Somebody changed our button.
The humanity.
That was awesome. It's usually a harp for those of you that are new to the show. That was amazing. Oh, that's so funny. Oh, it's all good. Yeah. No, but you know, God's going to give you a dollar. This idea. There's a parable that Jesus tells where a guy's been given one talent, three talents, and five talents, and talent was a measure of money. And the one guy with one was like, well, you know, I don't want to lose it. And he buried it. And the guy who had three turned it into six. And the guy who had five turned it into 10. And then eventually the guy who gave him the money shows back up and says, hey, what'd you do with my money? And the guy who had five said, hey, I turned it into 10. He says, well done. And the guy who had three said, hey, I took what you got and I turned it into six. He said, great. And the guy who had one took it and was like, well, I knew you drive a hard bargain. And you know, you're really, you know, cutthroat business guy, and I was afraid I'd lose the one, so I didn't do anything with it. And he says, you wicked and lazy servant, take what he has and give it to the one who has 10, because I know he's going to do it. And says, to whom much, you know, the person who's given much and does with it will be given more, and the one who doesn't have, even what he has will be taken from him. And it's that idea that, like, hey, if I you may only be given a dollar, but if I take that dollar and I make it work for me, you know, I have the opportunity to do that. And there's so many people squandering hours, minutes, dollars.
Yeah. And that's this pen. Like, if you look at it like it's, you know, disposable and it's no value. So the goal is to add value to everything. No, it's that. And it doesn't, I'm not saying that a piece of paper you need to worship, right? You need, you want to go to a place of lack where you fight hard and wash your pieces of paper so you can reuse them. That's the opposite of
it. Right. That's scarcity. Absolutely. Yes. It's the difference between, you know, you get holes in your socks. It's time to buy new socks.
Yes.
But you know, you're sitting there and when you have the socks, you're valuing what you have. Thanking God for what you have.
Got 1,000 uses out of those suckers before I get a hole in it.
So, you know, the generosity, the gratitude, appreciating, you know, and having a purpose for everything that you have. Those are three things that you can do with next to no money. You can be generous with 50 cents. Like, I mean, it is really a mentality issue.
But do you notice even in your brain, you're like, well, it's only a pen. I'll wait till I have a Ferrari before I start.
Yeah. People say, oh, it's easy for rich people. It's easy for people to have a lot of money.
$100 is what's valuable.
Yeah.
But that's not the ability to give value to the dollar to somebody. Cause that perspective is a dollar could be something in someone else's world. Generosity means lining those two things up.
Well, I can remember as a kid, my parents giving, you know, I would do some sort of job or whatever. I go to work with my dad or my mom, whatever. And I make $10 or we cut an elderly lady's grass next door and she would pay us $10 or $20 a cut. And my brothers and I would take turns doing it. And when I would get that money, my parents would turn around and give it to me in broken down denominations so that they'd be like, you know, we're going to take this and you need to give some, you need to save some. And they were trying to help me understand that the $20 wasn't to go get, you know, pizza, wasn't to go blow with my friends, but you know, the money that I had a responsibility to be generous with it first. I had a responsibility to put some in the bank. And then the next thing I did was whatever I wanted.
So Doug, as a kid, what were they able to get you to understand why you're doing that segment, or did they kind of let you fill in the gaps?
That's a good question. I think it was more of an, I mean, they started it as little, you know, I would get a dollar for my birthday or, you know, whatever. And then they would take it and they'd break it down into quarters and be like, all right, you know, we're going to give 10 cents to this and we're going to do that. And they were trying to teach that sort of stuff. But honestly, both my parents wrestled with living paycheck to paycheck. And so as much as they were doing that with me, I was catching more than I was being taught, if that makes sense. Because a lot of times we tell people, this is what you need to do, but we're demonstrating something completely different. And, you know, looking back at it, I think what they were telling me were the right things, but what they were doing in practice, I was picking up more of that.
That makes sense.
And so I've had to re-engineer, as you know, we've had a lot of conversation, particularly around the idea of wealth and money and navigating that. So, I would say a lot of that stuff is more caught than taught. You know, you can give somebody the principles. Like I've read Dave Ramsey's book. I've read, you know, several others. I watch a lot of, you know, different, I just signed up for this YouTube class, with, Grant Cardone. Cause I want to look at, you know, the income side of things and 10Xing things. And how do you do that? Which I'm excited about making those type of investments in myself. But when I look at that, it's all information. It has to become the practice. And I have to, you know, it's not just about, all right, well, we have to set a budget. It's not just about those things, but you really have to internalize, and the mentality stuff that we've been talking about has to become the daily practice for it to take root.
And what's ridiculous, and we've practiced this our entire lives, and we've modeled it in front of Ryan. I know that, like, if I had a $100 bill in my pocket, I would be so quick to figure out reasons to give it away. And I would have to find justifications to actually spend it on something for me or whatever. And it flips, because as a kid, it would be different. Yeah. Like, me, easy, give away, hard, you know?
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I still, you know, my own kids immediately, oh, we could get Legos, or I could buy this game,
exactly,
or I could whatever. And, you know, that's fine. It's your money. You can do what you want. But, you know, I want you to think through, and you do your best to explain. But there's certain things that, as you mature, that you just kind of you pick up. In the right atmospheres, I would say. Not everybody picks it up. So anything else you'd add to that conversation on wealth mentality that we didn't touch on that is important and key for people? So we hit the gratitude, the generosity, we hit the having a purpose for everything. We talked a little about investing. We talked about scarcity mentality and coupon cutting. What else? What other part are we missing?
So the one thing I did a poor job at today was I was supposed to tell you to organize these strategies. Cause if you listen to the show for a long enough period of time, it all interconnects and it's all going to be uniform no matter what. You're going to see some themes that kind of replay through, but because you're not studying this for 20 years, you need to be able to take the parts that resonate with you and plot it in a way where you know what the heck to do with it when you go home. So the one thing I would probably implore you to do, like I challenged Doug, to start listing some things that are in your world right now and figuring out the real value to them, and keep asking the question, and don't use your lizard brain to come up with what they're valuable to. Like, do they enable you? Do they make you feel good? Do they enrich relationships? All the positive things. Do they hit your health? Do they give you peace of mind? And are they part of love? And if you can't answer those questions, if you're like, I'm gonna do this because I don't want to be poor, or I don't want to do this because you know, I'm afraid of something, you're doing it completely for the wrong
reason.
And
those motivations never sustain.
Right.
They're the things that fizzle out. You know, I'm afraid I'm gonna be, you know, unhealthy. And so then you go to the gym and like, all right, doctor says I have to lose weight. You go, and that sustains you for a little bit. But fear doesn't make you push through. Eventually you're like, well, I guess I'm good enough. And then you move back off it. You have to dig underneath the surface and get to that why you do.
Yeah,
what you
for
do.
Sure. And organize it a lot better than I told you during this time. It starts with that deciding. Like, somebody has to get either hit bottom and decide out of negative things, or they're sick of being whatever, or through attrition where you're just like, you know, there should, you know, my seat makes me a little uncomfortable, and maybe little by little I can make it better.
Yeah. Maybe Thursday we can do some goal setting, and we can do some vision boarding.
Okay.
And we can go into maybe how to organize.
And if you're listening to the show, if you want us to use you as the example and help you through your situation, I mean, that would be really good.
Totally,
if you're
coach.
For sure. Absolutely.
I mean, not that we have it all figured out, but we'd love to look at things like.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.